Hey there, radio fans. This is Carl Castaneda, your preview/rumors editor, once again hosting an episode of Radio Free Nintendo. Not Nintendo Pirate Radio. Of course, we can never remember that damn name. Anyway, but joining me today are, once again, two staffers. We've got Stan Ferguson, our sports editor.
Hello.
And Stephen Windyman Rodriguez, our news editor.
And mailbag editor, don't forget. And I'm a jack of all trades.
And mailbag maniac.
A miracle worker.
Yes.
I work miracles.
Yeah. Where's Helen Keller at? Anyway, so we're gonna be discussing a few different things today. And let's just get right into it. First on the docket is the Nintendo DS Jet Black Edition. Now, this thing is, according to various news sources, selling like gangbusters in Japan. Isn't that right, guys?
From the pictures we've seen, absolutely.
Yeah, I can't believe that this is the fifth color to come out in Japan for the light. And people are still lining up, you know, hundreds deep. Shops are still selling out. And people are even standing in line holding other colored DSs.
Yeah.
What do they do with these things? Hey, seriously, what do they do with it? Is it decoration?
It's color mania, man. I mean, every time they announce a new color for anything in Japan, people got to get it. I don't know, maybe they think that the new color is better than their old one. I have no idea.
That's got to be a pain in the ass as far as friend codes are concerned.
Well, yeah, I imagine it would be.
I mean, you could just transfer your Wi-Fi settings over, so that's no big deal.
Oh, okay.
But I think the thing with the different colors is, people just want to say, hey, I got new color. You got an old color. I'm better than you.
But is that really worth $130 or $150, I think, as it is in Japan?
Apparently it is.
Those crazy Japanese people, man.
Nintendo has probably sold at least one to everybody in Japan by now. There's no way that...
Really? I mean, 158 million Japanese?
I think that's how many they sold on launch day for the Black system, so...
128 million.
Sure.
Why not? But, although, to be fair, the DS Lite and, I guess, regular DS, they're still in high demand in Japan, aren't they?
Oh, yeah.
So, it might not be new color day as much as, hey, maybe I can finally get a DS Lite, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Unless they're really in such demand that every single person in Japan needs to own one.
Yeah, or two.
Probably two.
But, and... luckily for Americans, the Jet Black Nintendo DS is coming to the States.
Woo, yeah, that's the one I've been waiting for.
Hey, it's also coming out in pink that same day, don't forget.
Yeah, peach pink, is that what they're calling it?
Coral pink, I think it is.
Coral pink, or whatever.
I'm looking forward to that one, too.
I'll bet you are.
Actually, when I first got my original Game Boy Advance, I went for the clear pink one. Because everybody had, the solid purple, and everybody had the solid white, and everybody had the clear white. Nobody had the clear pink, and I was like, I think I'd want this color. And I got it.
You want to be different. You want to be different.
Yeah.
Well, I actually opted out of the GBA and handheld gaming in general until I actually joined up with PGC. Sorry.
Yeah. I didn't get back into handheld gaming until the GBASP and Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced.
Yeah.
I've always been in handheld games because there are so many good games on, the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance. You just have to play them. You shouldn't be have.
Well, I know that now.
Not that long.
And I actually paid for my DS in really bad review games. Lots and lots and lots of really bad review games. I think I showed up with a crate full of the likes of Batman Begins and Red Hot Rumble.
Dude, one day I would love to review a great DS game.
A great DS game?
I would love to review one.
What DS games have I reviewed? Let's see, I think the best one that I reviewed so far was Brain Age, which was alright. It was an okay game. And then, but I also did Electroplankton. Which was not that great. And Lost Magic, which was really not that great. So, and then Cooking Mama, which was also not that great. So, I'm just... no luck. But Elite Beat Agents will soon be mine, so I'm counting on it being really good.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's cool.
Yeah, actually, I reviewed Oenden, the game of which Elite Beat Agents is basically the sequel to, and, you know, I still play that thing. That game really? Is awesome.
It, from what everyone was saying, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, you know, even if you plan on getting Elite Beat Agents, still, you might want to import Oenden, because, you know, it's crazy Japanese game. It's a stereotypical, the super crazy Japanese game. Yeah, I mean, it's all in Japanese, but you don't need to know Japanese to understand what's going on. And I like to say that even if you don't know what's going on, you can still make up your own story to go with the pictures. And it's just as entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but we don't want to know what kind of fan fiction's coming out of Uendan. Anyway.
Wow. Yeah, you can get some pretty nasty stuff out of it. Oh, that's another.
We'll leave that to the Talkback Goons. All right. So, next story on the docket today is also in sales news. Great news for EA. Madden has sold how many copies? Like 2 million?
2 million in 7 days.
In 7 days. That's how many of those? How many of those were on GameCube?
Two.
All of them, too.
All of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Two.
Sam, you're reviewing that game, aren't you?
Eventually. One day I might get it.
One day?
Yeah. If you can find a store that carries the GameCube version, is what you're saying.
Wait, did they release it on GameCube?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually only $40 on the GameCube. It's $50 on every other system and $60 if you're stupid enough to get the next-gen version.
Well, I mean, if you can't play it online, then it should be cheaper.
Yeah, and Johnny hasn't, as far as I know, he hasn't received it yet to send it to me, so.
So, yeah.
I'm still waiting on it.
But, I don't know, guys. I mean, do you really think that a game that comes out every year should be selling so much so fast?
Should? No.
No.
But who's to say what should and should sell well?
I guess.
You know, Jerry Bruckheimer movies make money somehow.
Somehow. Same goes for, like, Michael Bay, who's going to ruin Transformers. But that's another podcast.
Well, you know what about Madden is, you know, there's a really big fan base for it. And people like to, you know, give EA a lot of flack for, well, they're not doing anything new this year. Oh, there's no competition. They don't have to improve the game. Well, you know what? They do. Because if the Madden fan base doesn't like the game, they're going to tell EA about it. Obviously, that's not going to stop them from buying it the next year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, the Madden series is a good football game, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Whether you like EA's monopoly on it or not. So, you know, it is true that Madden would be better served if there was competition for 2K, the 2K series. But, you know, it's not going to happen for, what, 10 years?
Well, I think it was 5 years was the original agreement. I don't know if they've extended it at all.
Okay, 5 years.
I heard like a rumor about ESPN, or not ESPN, but Visual Concepts finding some kind of loophole in the contract that's going to let them make a new 2K game.
Well,
really?
Well, no, actually, I read about that too. And actually, what they were planning on doing, I think it was on their site at some point, they were asking their readers to come up, like, say, is this a good idea for a team name? Is this a good idea for a team name? And what they're basically going to do is kind of go the midway route with Blitz and make their own league.
Really?
But with their
That didn't really work out too well with Blitz, did it?
Well, it worked out well enough.
Yeah, I mean, Blitz is a pretty good game. Obviously, Blitz has always been different than a sim.
Yeah, it's more arcade, isn't it?
Yeah, it's more of an arcade game. So it'll be very interesting to see if 2K is actually doing this, if it will work with a sim.
Yeah.
I don't know about with the sim. That's going to be rough. But
as soon as anyone says sim to me, I just kind of lose interest.
Yeah, Blitz the League, though. Blitz has always just been fun for really, really short spurts. You know, just for the goofy, off-the-wall gaming.
I don't know. But yeah, so Madden sells 2 million copies. I think someone in our Talkback forum said 2 million idiots. But I will not criticize the Madden fan base. If you like a game, buy it, play it, enjoy it. Good for you.
Hey, it's the reason I bought a GameCube.
Exactly. For Madden? Wait, for Madden?
Yeah.
You bought the GameCube from? Wow, Stan, you fell on the wrong horse.
It was interesting. When I got the Cube, I was looking at it. I was like, all three of them have Madden, because I was really pissed because I had a Dreamcast, and I didn't really care for the 2K series. I had two 2K games, and I played Madden, and I was like, I must have Madden next.
But didn't everyone always like 2K better than Madden?
No. A lot of people prefer Madden over 2K. It sells so much more. But
that's true.
I actually think it's a better game than the 2K series, and so I wanted to get Madden, and GameCube was $100 cheaper, and I knew there'd be a Zelda game. I was sold.
Too bad about how many other millions of people disagreed with you. Unfortunately for Nintendo. Anyway.
That's a
sob story for... Once again, another podcast. We talk about more things that are not appropriate for this podcast than we actually talk about things that actually relate to our topic. Oh, that's the magic of radio.
Yes.
Anyway, so now we're going to get to the main course. It's the reason we brought Wendy in here. He's going to talk to us about bit generations. So, go ahead.
All right. Well, the bit generations games, when they were first announced, I kind of saw them as like, well, okay, Nintendo's releasing more stuff for the Game Boy, so they're probably just, you know, these cheap little things they threw together to keep the GBA from totally fading off into the sunset.
Right.
As a, you know, because the DS is obviously taking over.
Yeah.
Right.
So, they came out in two series, one in, like, both in July. And I started to look them up because when I have a Game Boy Micro. Mm-hmm. And, you know what, they're really cool. But when I started using it, I was like, man, this thing is not worth $100. And I try to force myself to use it to justify spending that much money on that little thing, and you know, I got the Play-In, the media player, imported
the little micro one for the...
Yeah, for like MP3s and video files from the Game Boy, and that was really cool, and I used it a lot, especially for video, but I just couldn't still justify my purchase.
Right.
So, I was thinking, well, okay, I think I want to get a new Game Boy game. Couple new Game Boy games. So I look at the Bit Generations games, and people are talking about, wow, these things are really good. Like, this is so cool. It's like, okay, I got a couple extra bucks, so I'll import a couple. First, I got DotStream and Dialhex.
Yeah.
And I have the DotStream review up on the site already.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. Yeah.
And I tell you what, that game is friggin' awesome.
You gave it an 8.5, right?
I did.
Yeah.
And it's so weird that a game that's so simple, it's just lines and squares and, you know, dots that tell you that's
and
track,
streams,
basically.
Dots and streams. That's the whole point, dots and streams.
Yeah, but it's amazing that Nintendo put real gameplay into it. Like, for instance, at the start of a race, you always start last. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a very good game. But anyways, you start last. And the idea is obviously to catch up, get to the front. You have to go faster than the other streams to do that, obviously. Mm-hmm. So you have turbo boosts. You can use those to, you know, get a shot of speed. But the caveat to that is that they're also your lives. So if you hit something without any boosts left, you die. Hmm. And the tracks get very complex, and you don't want to use your boosts because you will crash a lot, and you will die a lot.
Interesting.
So
all this with dots and lines?
Dots and lines. And you're afraid to boost. You become afraid to boost because... You know, you're about a lap and a half in, and you hit something, and your race is over. You're like, and it sucks. But there's some strategy with this, isn't that you can kind of rub up against another line, and it will start to slowly fill a drafting meter.
Right.
And once that meter gets up high enough, your top speed will increase, and then you can start going faster than the other lines. So it becomes a game of strategy. Do you want to use your boosts to get to the front? Do you want to not use your boosts so you don't risk dying and just kind of draft off the other lines?
Interesting.
It's really cool. You know,
it sounds like fun. But by opening the packet, didn't you kind of lessen the value by about 90%?
You know, actually no, because the boxes these things come in, they're actually kind of like collector's items.
Really?
Because you know, like your average Game Boy Advance game box, like in America?
It's like a cardboard.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, just the size of it, rather.
Okay, yeah.
Like, the Bit Generations boxes are about half or three-quarter the size.
Wow.
They open in a different way. I got one in my hands right now. Like, they open, they're kind of have a metallic chrome inside where the game is being held.
Cool.
And on the side of it, it has, like, little symbols for all the games in the series. So they're kind of meant to be, you know, bought as a group, kind of collected, right. And you can kind of display them on your shelf.
Hmm.
Yeah, so they're really neat.
I remember seeing on Chris Kohler's blog that video of him. He had to drink just a little bit to kind of convince himself to open the package. And then I think he actually played it and then said, wow, these games really suck. I really should have opened the package.
Actually, those were for the Game & Watch Gallery Collection for the DS for the Club Nintendo. Ah. Yeah, that's something completely different. These are actually, like, the Bit Generations games are a series of games that were released to retail, so anybody can get them or import them.
So the ones that he got, I think those were only available for Nintendo Club Nintendo members?
Yeah. Ben has a impressions of that up on the site, actually.
Yeah.
Our Australian mates.
Yeah.
The Game & Watch games, huh?
Yeah.
Game & Watch. I've never played any of those.
I grew up on them. I had a Donkey Kong Jr. on Game & Watch. And
really?
It was incredibly fun back then.
Back then. The first system to have a D-pad, right?
Yeah.
The first system to have a D-pad, I think.
It did.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah. Okay, but that's...
There's some random trivia in there for you.
Okay, so back on topic, Bit Generations. All right.
Yeah.
So the other game I got in the first set was Dial Hex. It's a puzzle game in which it's like a hexagonal playfield, and little triangles rain down and fill it up. And you have a cursor that's also a hexagon.
Cool.
You have to rotate the little triangle pieces inside the hexagon, counterclockwise or clockwise inside the cursor. And you need to arrange all the triangle tiles into groups of six to form a hexagon. And when you do that, they clear off, and all the pieces kind of fall and fill in the rest. So it's basically clear out all the triangle pieces before the playfield fills up.
Hmm. How much is the Bit Generations package?
Oh, well, in Japan, the games are like 2,000 yen each, which is like $17.
That's not that bad.
Yeah, but you know, if you want to import them, it's like, I think it was like 40 40? Bucks each from Lixing, yeah.
Wow, that is a hefty importer's fee.
Yeah, which is why some of these Bit Generations games aren't totally worth it. I mean, they're all good, but
not 40 bucks good.
Yeah, not 40 bucks. Like Dial Hex is a good example. I'll have a review of that up later this week, but they're like the mode of gameplay I just described to you. That's all that's in the game. So that's all you do.
So yeah, I don't think I'll be honing up 40 bucks for that.
Yeah, and, you know, and I have to say though, I mean, if you've played Luminous for the PSP,
which I have,
and that game's amazing. But it's kind of a game that's like that. You start playing it, and you kind of get lost in it for 20-30 minutes straight in endless mode. But it's not something you want to play, you know, 2-3 hours at a time. It's just like, you know, pick it up, play it once, set it down. A day or two later, you pick it up again, play it once, set it down. That kind of thing. Yeah, but,
well, I've got Luminous's DS cousin, Meteos, and that's very much the same way, where you're not necessarily going to play it for hours at a time, but you will play small spurts.
Yeah, like I have both Meteos and Luminous, and we're getting off topic again, but the difference between the two... is Meteos, you know, you play it, the levels are 3-4 minutes at a time. You play it a couple levels and you're done. Luminous is, you play one game for like an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours.
Wow.
And yeah, that thing sucks you in once you start and you don't want to stop. It's one of those games where you start playing and you don't care that you're cramping and your ears are hurting and you just want to keep playing it until you die. And then when you finally do die, you realize, holy crap, did I really spend an hour and a half playing that game?
Exactly.
But so what are the Vegas odds of these coming out in the United States? Ever?
Well, they're... You know what? There's no reason why Nintendo shouldn't, because every single one of these games are completely in English.
Yeah, but I mean, how many games has Nintendo opted not to localize that would be pretty easy?
Well, no. I mean, these games don't even need to be localized. All they need to do is change the text on the health and safety warning screen to English.
Oh, really?
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's true.
And, you know,
they... screenshots right now, and they're all in English.
Yeah, all they need to do is... Well, it would be in their best interest to release them over here, because they can be, you know, cheap, $20. I mean, they're probably not even worth 15, but $20 for Nintendo. And, you know, the Game Boy needs games.
That's debatable, in my
opinion.
Well,
what else is coming out for it besides Pokemon?
Well, yeah, I'm just saying that I don't necessarily think that the GBA needs to be, you know, still supported with new games at this point.
Well,
I think it's time for it to die out. In my opinion, anyway, I don't know.
Well, it's not going to die out. It's probably going to be like the PlayStation 1. You know, even though the PS2 was steamrolling over everything, games were still coming out for it 3 or 4 years later.
Yeah, I guess.
So, sure. I mean, you have to keep making new games for a system that has an installed user base of over 100 million people.
Yeah, you got a good point there.
It's quick and easy money.
They still got, you know, Rhythm Tengoku that they could localize if they wanted to. Mother 3. But, you know, I guess that's up to Nintendo of America.
You know, Mother, this is just my best guess at it, but they'll probably make that a DS game if they were ever to bring it over here.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, they had the that rumor a while back about Mother 1, 2, and 3 coming out as a DS cartridge.
I don't think that will happen, because, you know, Nintendo likes to keep things separate and make you buy everything separately.
Well, they had the Mother 1 and 2 compilation in Japan.
Yeah, so, I mean, they could release that in Game Boy and then do something for Mother 3 on the DS, and maybe have some way for them to link up through the DS, I don't know.
Connectivity. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so, just anything else about Bit Generations?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the other... It's a series of 7 games,
mm-hmm.
And I have 2 more on the way, Sound Voyager and Orbital. Cool. So, I'll go through those really quick. Orbital is a really, really neat little game. From what I played a little bit of it already, but basically what it is that you're a little tiny planet, but not really a planet. Kind of like Pluto, you know. Mm. You're just a little ball. And all you do, the controls are just the A and B button. The A button attracts, and the B button repels. And the play fields are kind of like these solar systems with other heavenly bodies. Like, there'll be these little tiny kind of asteroid-sized things, and you get the giant planet-sized things. And the goal of the game is to attract yourself or repel yourself from or to these things in space to collide with them or catch them as little moons for a little planet. So if you hit something that's about your size, you'll absorb it, and your planet will grow. And as it grows and grows and grows, you can absorb larger and larger things and make your little planet larger and larger. I've seen screenshots where it's gotten to a point where it takes up a significant portion of the Game Boy screen. You can have a huge planet under your control. And you can also pick up little moons. And I've seen a little video that somebody had like 20 moons around your little planet.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I've never played anything else like it before, and from what I've heard, it gets really, really complicated toward the end. So, I wouldn't call it a puzzle game, but it kind of is, because you need to work on how to, you know, you can attract yourself to one planet, but you'll also be repelling away from another one at the same time, so you have to figure out how the gravity works.
That sounds kind of, you know, complex. I'm wondering, how intuitive is it with the GBA's controls?
It's easy. I mean, like I said, it's just two buttons. The A button and the B button. And that controls the entire game.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So, what do we got next? Voyager.
I'm sorry?
Sound Voyager. That's one of the other games in the series. The box says it requires headphones because it is entirely played with sound. Stereo sound. You can close your eyes to play it, basically.
Really?
Weird. Yeah.
But isn't the GBA, doesn't have mono sound?
Yes, which is why it requires headphones to play.
So, do they include headphones with it, or...?
No, they do not. But pretty much everybody has headphones, so it's not that big of a deal.
Unless you have a GBASP, in which case you need to buy the adapter.
Oh, yes. Everyone has a DS, though.
Yeah, everybody has a DS now. But yeah, it's really cool. It's, you know, there are, like, no graphics in the game at all. You know, you could open up MS Paint and make a better game than what Sound Voyager looks like.
Nice.
But, I mean, there are things where you have to find a sound, so you go left or right to pick it up in the stereo field, and, you know, once the sound is right in the middle, you know you're right on line with the object. Sometimes you have to avoid a sound, so there's like a racetrack and a sound is coming at you, and you have to make sure that the sound passes you on the side. There's other things where you're chasing a sound, and you have to navigate through a course with objects trying to hit you, but again, it's only sound that's trying to hit you. So you need to work around the sound. Hmm. It's a very fascinating concept for a video game.
Hmm. Finding the sound.
Yeah, so I'm curious to try that out. The full version of
it. You're going to be putting up reviews for all these games, right?
Yeah, those games, and I'm thinking about maybe getting the other three, just because, you know, once you start something, you got to finish them all. And plus, it'd be really cool to have all these little boxes on my bookshelf.
Yeah, never mind that they're $40 a game.
Well, you know, hopefully the other ones I don't get will eventually come out. They'll probably come out in the U.S., I'm saying. And I can get them then, but the boxes won't be as cool. They'll probably be just the giant, ugly Game Boy Advance boxes.
Exactly.
So, so those are the four I'm going to get, and then briefly let me go over the other three.
Sure.
Boundish is Pong.
Pong?
And that's really all there is to say about
that, yeah.
Yeah, you can do two-player Pong, but...
Ooh, that's not getting crazy now.
All right. Wait, two-player Pong always was two-player.
That's blowing my mind, man.
Well, you see that's the point of it, is that it's on the Game Boy, so you can only play it with one player unless you have another person to play it with.
Right.
Right.
Which makes it almost worthless unless you can find somebody else to play it with.
You know,
it's a pretty version of Pong, but it's still Pong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see what else. Coloris. This game will make you hate the fact that you didn't pay attention to elementary school when they went over the color charts, you know, primary, secondary colors.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it requires that you know, I mean, it's a grid of colored squares, and you need to match three in a row horizontally or vertically, and they're clear. But there's a cursor that's also a colored cursor, and depending on what color is, the square that you selected will change color one way or the other, like toward like the red side of the spectrum or towards the blue side of the spectrum. And in the later levels, you are required to know a color's like complement. So like blue and green, I guess, or I don't know the exact details. But if you select a certain color while another color is on the cursor and you try to change it, it'll turn into like a garbage block or something and you can't change it anymore. So it requires you to be very knowledgeable in the color wheel, basically.
So in the primary colors, that would be like red, blue, yellow, and what else?
Red, blue, and yellow are the primaries.
And then green and purple and all that good stuff.
Green and purple and orange.
Or secondary. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no browns, but like before every round, it'll tell you what the color spectrum for that round is. And I've heard it gets really, really nuts because you need to change all these colors really fast, and you have to know what color your cursor is and which color it'll change to when you select it, and also to make sure that you don't change a color when you have a cursor that will turn into a garbage block. Mm. So I think I will eventually pick that up, but it looks a little too complicated for me to. You know, I like puzzle games, but this one, Coloris looks kind of complicated. Mm. All right, and then there's one more game in the series, and that's Digidrive. And this one, a lot of people still haven't figured out exactly how to play. from what I gather, the play field is like a D-pad shape, and these little chevron marks come in from every direction. And you can reroute them by pressing the D-pad in a different direction. So if one's coming in from the left, you can tell it to go down by pressing down when it gets to the intersection. And from there, from what I gathered on, like reading game facts and other people's impressions of it, the idea is to stack them up in a certain way, which fills a fuel gauge on that direction. And if you can fill up enough of them, this little rocket on the right side of the screen shoots up. And the higher it shoots up, the better your score. And that's all I can gather from it. It looks weird. None of these games are things that people have really come up before, aside from Pong, obviously.
Right.
There are new concepts, there are new ways to play games. And they're supposed to show that you don't need really cool graphics or this elaborate depth. Well, not depth, but this giant game to have really good gameplay. And, you know, DotStream...
Which is what Nintendo's really, kind of all about these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, and I mean, these are basically the Game Boy version of Nintendo's philosophy. Especially, you know, DS and Wii. You know, they just want Game Boy games to show off. They can do that, show that too. So, like, DotStream and Dial Hex. I mean, Dial Hex and Coloris, everybody's played puzzle games before. But these are, you know, new concepts. They're a little complex in you know, case of Coloris, and a little too simple in Dial Hex. But, you know, they're still really neat games. Mm-hmm. And if they came out here in the U.S. for, you know, $20, definitely two or three of them would be worth picking up. There's enough variety in all these games for somebody to want to play at least one or two of them.
Absolutely. And that would... Does that conclude it for Bit Generations?
Yeah, that's pretty much just you know, keep checking the site. I'll have reviews of them as I, you know, get them and play them and figure them out. So look for Dial Hex soon in Orbital and Sound Voyager a week or two after that.
All right, sounds awesome. And then for our final segment tonight, we've got to, you know, tip our hats to a fallen Aussie. Steve Irwin passed away yesterday after being attacked by a stingray. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. He was. He was apparently filming an underwater documentary about. I think it was like on dangerous predators of all things. Mm-hmm. And I heard he just, you know, swam over a stingray, and the stingray just stabbed him into the chest.
Ouch.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like a. So you'd want to have.
We pay our respects to you, Steve. You know, keep fighting the good fight wherever you are now.
Yes, hopefully he'll be, you know, wrangling alligators and crocodiles up in the big.
Up in the big, who knows?
Yes, this guy, the great beyond.
We'll miss you, Steve. Who else is gonna put their fingers up crocodiles' asses now?
Hey. Wait, you know,
way to ruin the somber mood there.
You know, actually, I just realized something. Hmm. You know, heaven is usually thought of as being up,
right?
But since Australia is upside down, what's...
Wouldn't it be down under?
Down.
Yeah. Under. Let's not explore that too deeply. We don't want to accidentally say that Australia is actually part of hell.
I did not imply such a thing.
Well, I just did, so let's not get into it.
Well, if you're going to say something like that, just say it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, let's move on. I don't think Steve Irwin would appreciate us mocking his
exactly.
Homeland.
We're not trying to make light of the situation here. We're gonna miss Steve for real.
Yes, he was one of the great ambassadors to crocodile hunting.
Absolutely. Definitely. All right, and I believe that ends our show for today. So, on that unfortunately sad note. This has been me, Carl Castaneda, our sports editor, Stan Ferguson, and this week's special guest, Stephen Windyman Rodriguez.
Thanks again, Steve, for appearing on the show.
You know what? If you ever want to invite me back, I'm sure I'll.
Oh, that'll never happen.
Oh. Okay.
Well, you can actually rest assured, Steve, there will be negotiations.
Negotiations.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So, a signing bonus. 6-year contract.
Oh, nothing like that. It'll be more along the lines of punching Carl in the throat.
That's what happened a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. When
that sounds like the kind of negotiation I like. You know.
Oy vey. Anyway, so that takes us out for the week. So, sayonara, everybody.
Good night.
Bye bye.